Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Friend Wrap. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, today joined by Maurice Ruart. Let's get into the news of today, and the first thing we're going to talk about is the most recent series of by-elections around the country. Looks like the PA is continuing to strengthen itself in various wards around the country. Some of these by-elections, it seemed to do pretty well. There were three by-elections held. One of them, the PA, I think, hurt the DA a bit in what was formerly a pretty safe ward for the DA. In the 2021 election, this is in Ward 30 in Manaburg, Cape Town. It's between Hanover Park and Guguletu on the Cape Flats, east of the Cape Town city center. In the 2021 election, the DA got 61% of the vote here, with the ANC, I think, coming in second place at around 11%. The PA and the National Coloured Congress, who are a party that I think only operates mostly in the Western Cape, and I think they have one or two MPs in Parliament, saw their vote share shoot up. The National Coloured Congress went up from 4% to 21% in this by-election. The Patriotic Alliance went from 2% to 20%. The DA went down from 61% to 43%. However, the DA still managed to hold the ward. So close, I guess, but not good enough from those challenging parties if they want to swing the balance of power. In Matsukama on the West Coast, the PA managed to win a ward from the ANC. This is one of those very tightly fought wards where previously the ANC was the biggest party with 38%. The DA was the second biggest party with 32%. And the Patriotic Alliance had about 15% of the vote. The PA managed to grow themselves from 15 to 40% in this ward. The DA stayed about the same at around 32%. And the ANC went way down from 38 to 27%. And then the other by-election was in Amatole in Adelaide, or near Adelaide, where the ANC went down a bit and managed to pretty much hold the line there. So not a huge amount of change. But Maurice, what do you make about what this says about the sort of state of the country's politics at the moment? It looks like the PA is continuing to sort of challenge the ANC and the DA for in the Western Cape, particularly the rural Western Cape, and even now it seems the Cape Flats as well, but they're not quite managing to sort of get themselves over the line in some places. Also, what do you make of the National Coloured Congress's performance?
I will just want to point out that the third by-election was in the Eastern Cape, Raymond Mhlaba municipality, which is around about Bedford and Fort Beaufort and that. And there the PA actually got 20% of the votes yesterday, going up from 7%. And in raw numbers, went from 170 votes to 499, just behind the DA. So even outside the Western Cape, the PA is doing pretty well. And this has pretty much been the pattern for most of these by-elections, where the PA's been having pretty strong performances, as you say, especially in the rural Western Cape. But it's even done well in like places you wouldn't expect it to be, like places where there aren't many colored people. There have been wards in, you know, rural Mpumalanga and rural Northwest where it's getting 20 or 30% of the vote. So, you know, the PA is definitely something to watch, and they doing something. Yeah, it's definitely something to watch. And I think, and they're obviously not just taking votes away from the DA, they're also taking votes away from the ANC. I think Matsikama, like you pointed out, the DA stayed pretty much where it was in the compared to local government elections, but the ANC fell by about 10 percentage points. And if you combine that to the PA's vote plus Good's vote, then that's pretty much you know, gives the PA the win in Matsikama. So the PA is definitely doing something right. And yeah, as you say, the National Coloured Congress, they went from 4% up to 20%. So I think there's definitely something happening within, you know, ethnic coloured politics. You know, there's always been that kind of cliche, coloured people say they weren't white enough during apartheid and they're not black enough now. And they feel like they've kind of been abandoned by both the apartheid government and subsequent post-apartheid governments. So there's something happening there. And, you know, while there's nothing wrong inherently with people, you know, voting for like kind of colored-based parties, we just got to keep an eye on it and make sure it doesn't become kind of this like ethnic chauvinism where you get colored people maybe saying, you know, the Western Cape is only for colored people or Cape Town's only for colored people, whatever the case is. And you've seen that kind of thing. There's been, you know, that kind of thing just bubbling under the surface. And it's, I think, just something to keep an eye on and
I
something
think the
that's
national,
concerning.
I think the National Colored Congress is far more guilty of that kind of politics. The PA, I think, has flirted with that kind of stuff, but generally speaking, I think Ed McKenzie has tried to make the party's appeal broader, and I think he's been rewarded for that across the country. But I think the National Colored Congress is unambiguously promoting exactly that kind of politics that you're describing there, Marius.
But well, I mean, the PA has also had it's had black people in senior positions, had white people. I mean, Kenny Cunanie is the deputy president, and had Charles Celia, I think that's his name. He's the national spokesperson for the PA and one of their primary strategists. And he's a white guy. Obviously, he used to be the, I think he was the political editor at the Citizen newspaper. Yeah, so the PA has definitely been, they haven't tried to buy quite as much into that, coloured ethnic politics. And even, I suppose, if you, I mean, this is maybe a bit superficial, but if you look at what's the PA slogan, Bazaar, which I mean, doesn't sound Afrikaans to me. So, it makes you think they're also trying to, like take from all
Yeah,
kinds of cultures.
exactly. I think they really have tried to capture that sort of socially conservative, sort of slightly populist section of the electorate, where there hasn't really been a serious party kind of trying to take that space. And I expect that explains some of, like, for example, this Eastern Cape result where they did, they jumped from 7% to 19% in this by-election. I mean, whether they'll be able to carry that on in the next local government elections, I think remains to be seen. But it's exactly because they've been playing into that kind of politics. Gavin McKenzie's been saying things like how we need to bring God back into school, and he's always saying tough on crime, and he's also
Support of
been
Israel.
really anti, support of Israel, anti-foreigner, that kind of thing. And I think that in general has broadened his appeal. But I do
And
worry exactly about the, sort of this racialized politics. I mean, South Africa's had far too much racialized politics in our history for us to add another major stream of that into our current mix.
In the last couple of surveys I've seen that have come out from the Social Research Foundation and the Institute of Race Relations, the PA has gone up a bit. So I think in our latest survey, they were at nearly 4% of the vote, compared to 2.2%, I think, which they got in the May elections. I think that's partly also because they're part of the GNU, and GNU parties seem to have got a little bit of a bump. And also maybe just Gaita McKenzie has been pretty prominent in his role as sports and arts and sports, arts and culture minister.
No, exactly. Okay, let's move on to our next story, and that is that the South African Reserve Bank has cut the interest rate by 0.25%, or as all the fancy finance people call it, 25 basis points. Interestingly, this is against a background of often in, interest rates are used to control inflation. And apparently, according to the latest inflation stats, South Africa is experiencing one of its lowest levels of inflation in a very long period. Since 1970, South Africa has only had inflation this low in 2004 and 2020. 2020 was a weird year, of course, because we had the whole the lockdowns of COVID and everything, and the whole world experienced a big drop in inflation as demand suddenly dried up. But 2004 was also just kind of, before we went through a pretty good economic patch. So this seems like pretty good news. Inflation is really bad for people in power. It's really bad for people who are struggling to get by, and seeing it drop, I think, is a great thing. It's a welcome relief, especially from the big spike in inflation we had in the last couple of years. Some of this, I'm sure, is a bit of a global trend because I think inflation has been going down across the world. But Marius, what do you make of this? There are some people calling for the Reserve Bank to have actually more aggressively cut interest rates to try and promote economic growth. What do you make of all this?
Yeah, I think it's all pretty good news, obviously. I mean, it also shows, I mean, it's outside the Reserve Bank's target of 3.6%. And there has been talk of actually lowering that target even further, say to two, between 2 and 4%, which I don't think is a bad idea. And this is probably going to give people who think that more ammunition to do that. As far as I can tell, the drop, I mean, there's quite low inflation is because fuel prices are quite a lot lower actually than they were a year ago. And there's also been decreases in the price of most food. Apparently, the only thing that's really still growing is coffee, I believe, which is up 20% compared to the same time last year. But most foods are actually cost the same as it did last year or lower. I know it probably doesn't feel like that. A lot of people say things do feel a bit more expensive, and that's probably right. But I mean, like there's a difference between anecdotes and actual statistics. But overall, I think this is pretty good. And Yeah, I think there was probably room for the Reserve Bank to drop interest rates a bit more, but we do have quite a conservative Reserve Bank. But I think that's a good thing, though, overall. It's one of the last real centers of excellence within the government, and it's probably Reserve Bank along with Treasury, especially in the Jacob Zuma years, were kind of the last bulwarks against the collapse of the economy. They were kind of both a little Dutch boy standing with their fingers in the hole in the dikes, trying to hold back this flood of terrible news or whatever the case is. So yeah, overall, I think this is obviously pretty good, and it's I'm sure the GNU parties will be telling us this is all thanks to them, and maybe it is, but overall, yeah, I think it's one of those green shoots that hopefully we'll see a lot more of. We've seen a couple of them in the last couple of weeks. I mean, there was obviously employment also went up very slightly, obviously not nearly enough where it needs to be, but hopefully we'll see more of this kind of thing, and hopefully we'll get some momentum going into the new year, getting some proper economic growth, not this kind of moribund 0.5 or 1% we've been getting annually as a rule in the last few years.
Right. If the GNU wants to have any positive impact on South Africa and wants to hold the country together, I think it's very important that it does begin to achieve better economic growth. So this is one of the most important numbers to watch going forward. All right. Let's very briefly touch on our last subject. A progress report on the radical overhaul of the history cu curriculum was discussed during a briefing to the Parliament's Portfolio Committee on Basic Education this week. There was talk by a number of academics about moving South Africa away from what they called a Eurocentric South African history, where learners are taught to make the country an extension of Europe, beginning the country's history in with the arrival of Jan van Riebeck in the mid 1600s. The idea was to focus more on what they called African-centered history. And there were sort of various comments from politicians and stuff on this, basically endorsing this as well as from various academics. Now, I'm a great lover of history, and I will say that in theory, I think that there's some scope for this. I'm not entirely sure whether the history is nearly as Eurocentric as they claim it to be. Now, I did not do the government education curriculum, but I did do the Independent Education Board curriculum when I was at school. And already then, there was quite a lot of focus on the parts of history that were not anything really to do with Europe. Yes, there was some talking about French Revolution and Jan van Riebeck and those sort of things, but there was also a lot of focus on, for example, Mapungubwe, the archaeological site in northern South Africa, in Limpopo. I suspect, the cynic in me suspects that while I think there is room actually to include more interesting and fascinating bits of history that we've learned mostly through archaeology about South Africa's people before the arrival of the Dutch, that this is very vulnerable to being hijacked by people with sort of ideological agendas. I don't know, Marius, what do you make of this?
I agree with you. I don't think there's anything inherently wrong with making the curriculum more Afrocentric or whatever you want to call it. But I mean, I was even when I finished school, I mean, I finished back in 1997, and even I mean, I remember matric here, we did a lot of South African history, a lot of stuff from the 1960s and stuff. Obviously, World War II was a big thing in matric history, as well as I recall. I mean, there's just quite a funny thing here. So a guy called Johan Wasserman, professor of history education at the University of Pretoria, says it's unfortunate that we use colonial markers such as 1652 and 1820, which obviously when Jan van Riebeck and the 1820 British settlers arrived here. But I mean, those are big happenings in South African history. That's like saying, we shouldn't look at 1939 and 1914. When you're talking about European history in the 20th century, you must look at other things. But those are massive events. You can't look at European history without looking at what happened in 1914 and 1939. Same as South African history. Even if you're not trying to make it Eurocentric, the what happened in 1652 with the arrival of Jan van Riebeck and 1820 with the arrival of the British settlers, those are big, impactful events in South African history. You can't ignore them or pretend they weren't important, or they didn't affect how the country developed. So it's all that's
Yeah.
just it's all a bit silly, actually. But yeah, overall, I mean, I don't think there's anything inherently wrong with trying to make the curriculum a little bit different and trying to make it a bit more Africa focused.
I think I think there is scope for saying, we do know some things about South African history pre the arrival of European settlers, a lot of it through archaeology rather than through sort of written accounts and that kind of stuff. And I think you can tell some really fascinating stories about the sort of the creation of the South Africa that was there in when South Africa gets connected to the outside world. And that's a story that's very poorly understood by most South Africans and definitely deserves to be told. I think it's an important part of understanding exactly how this place works or where we came from. And yet I just get it when I see lots of sort of left-leaning academics getting very excited and using buzzwords like Eurocentric, Afrocentric, things like that. I go, yeah, no, I have a feeling that this is going to be a little bit. This is going to be trying to push a point rather than educate. There's some room for pushing points, I think, in national education, but really, I would be cautious here. Anyway, just some thoughts on that one. That's all the time we have for today. Hope you found the show interesting. That's a wrap.
The Daily Friend Show and the Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR, or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.